We're living in a world of digital platforms and tech giants. But are these platforms the result of healthy competition, of network effects and ingenious entrepreneurs? Or are they creating powerful incumbents that impede innovation and competition? In this complicated and heated debate, it's important to rely on data, data about what platforms do and what their effects are. Today, let's talk to Luis Aguiar about his recent paper on platforms, power, and promotion, evidence from Spotify playlists. Luis is an assistant professor at the University of Zurich, and he has co-authored the paper with Joel Waldfogel from Minnesota. Welcome, Luis.
Thank you, Stefan.
Why don't you tell us a bit about your paper and what you found?
Sure. So the main motivation for this paper is actually twofold. So the first one relates to the very important debate around platform power. So today we observe many platforms dominating their respective markets. You can think of advertising, search, or retail. And this is generating a lot of concerns about whether these platforms are actually becoming too powerful. And so the music industry offers a nice context to study this particular question of platform power and how they can affect consumers' ultimate consumption decisions. So one important aspect is that digitization has prompted major changes in the music industry. If you look about two decades ago, you had a market that was essentially operated through two sets of gatekeepers. So on the one hand, you had promotion that was handled by radio stations, and this was a relatively fragmented market with many radio stations. On the other hand, distribution was handled by, record stores, which was also a relatively fragmented market. So essentially, consumers had various options to get their music from that perspective. Nowadays, both promotion and distribution are being handled by a very few set of streaming platforms, and they simultaneously and collectively dominate promotion and distribution together. And within these platforms, obviously, Spotify is one of the biggest player and has the largest market share. And so promotion in the digital world is mainly done now through playlists. So you can think of them as, the old radio, essentially. And the interesting point about playlists at Spotify, if you look at the data, even though, anybody is free to create a playlist and have it followed, if you look at the data, the most followed playlists are all owned by Spotify, or most of them, at least. So the top 25 playlists are owned by Spotify, meaning that they decide what to put on these playlists. And even if you look at the top 1,000 playlists, 85% of the followers are following playlists that are owned by Spotify. So Spotify clearly dominates playlists on its own platform and has potential power to influence consumption if these playlists have an effect on consumption. So that's our first question, really. Do these playlists have an effect on consumption? The second motivation, as I was alluding to, is relating to the effects that digitization has had on the amount of music that is produced in the market. So digitization has led to a very important lowering of production cost of music. And so nowadays we have literally millions of songs entering Spotify each year. It's about 5 million, which is an astounding number, really. So this creates an important product discovery challenge for consumers. And playlists, again, here can play a role in helping consumers discover new products. So that's kind of the second question of the paper related to the role of playlists. And what we do find by focusing on the most prominent playlist at Spotify is that indeed Spotify has substantial power to influence both song success and consumers' decisions. So appearing on the most prominent Spotify playlist, for instance, which is today's top hits, can lead to ultimately an extra 20 million streams for a particular song, which can translate into $77,000 in extra revenue from Spotify alone. So these are not small numbers. So we also find that appearing on playlists that are more focused on new music released on the platform also help the ultimate success of these songs. And so Spotify also helps the discovery of new products that enter the platform. So the conclusion is essentially that Spotify does have power to both influence consumption and help in the discovery of new songs on the platform.
Great. So I think this is really interesting because it gives kind of a detailed, insight in what's going on in a platform like Spotify. So I'm wondering, so for an individual artist whose song gets added to, a playlist by Spotify, this can actually turn into actual revenue, as you show in the paper. But I'm wondering to what extent this is only kind of about redistribution, like, one artist wins, the other artist loses. Or to what extent, can an analysis like this also inform us about, welfare effects, about effects in competition and or innovation?
Yeah, so that's a great point. So it's very hard to make claims about welfare here because, as you say, playlists could either draw additional consumption relative to a world where playlists are not available, or they could simply, displace consumption that would have otherwise happened on the platform anyway. So unfortunately, we cannot really say anything related to this effect of the playlists. However, there are important implications if you think in terms of competition or, as you said, indie artists or specific artists that release their songs on Spotify. So if Spotify, controls so much of the playlists, and if playlists do have an effect, as we show, it can become a problem if Spotify starts having, incentives to promote certain artists over others. Why would they want to do that? Well, for instance, they may want to promote artists that are cheaper for them. So, for instance, songs that require them to pay lower royalties. So that would be clearly an incentive for them to reduce their cost of maintaining their platform. At another extreme, you can imagine that if Spotify starts creating their own music, or if they become kind of a label by signing direct licensing deals with artists, they will have strong incentives to promote these artists over others on their playlists. And so that's when these competition issues can really become relevant. So I just want to make clear that, in our paper, we don't show any evidence that Spotify is actually distorting competition in that way or, even abusing their power. But we do show that it has a lot of power over what people ultimately consume through these playlists. And so given the potential for abuse of power, given this power, I think our results really suggest that there's a real need to have continued scrutiny as to how firms exercise their power in these markets.
So think about, Spotify exercising power over these playlists. This reminds me a bit of, a very different setup. Supermarkets or bookstores exercising power over which products to put on their shelves. And there are, situations where these stores are charging slotting fees to producers in order to allow them to put their products on particular shelves and so on. And so I'm wondering, to what extent is this a similar situation, or is this something totally different? Because now we are talking about digital media music platform.
So I think it is very related. Yes. So you can really think of playlist as shelves in a store, and so each of these are displayed more or less prominently when you open Spotify. Just as when you walk in a bookstore, you have different shelves in at the beginning of the store, at the end of the store, and then within the shelves, different positioning of the books. And here it's the same idea. When you open Spotify, you are presented with different playlists, and Spotify decides what to show you. You can also have different playlists shown to you when you look for a song. And so, and Spotify clearly has control over that as well. So really, Spotify controls kind of the digital shelf space. You're absolutely right. For many artists, because these playlists have such a large effect, the question is, how do I get into a given shelf? And, how do I get into a given playlist effectively? And given our results, Spotify also clearly has an incentive to charge artists or right holders to appear on these lists, just as supermarkets or bookstores do when they, sell slots on their shelves. And the point you referred to, which is essentially paying to get more exposure, is what used to be known as payola in the old days of the music industry, where record labels would go to the radio stations and pay DJs in order for them to play their music more, essentially. I would say that the main difference nowadays is that, well, Spotify does not charge artists to appear on their playlists, at least to our knowledge and based on their own claims. But I really think that the analogy is spot on, yes.
So your paper, benefits a great deal from the fact that Spotify has made this data publicly available and that you can analyze, the effect of these playlists. Now, for lots of other companies, such data and industries, such data is probably not available, and probably also Spotify has other data that it doesn't make available. And so I'm wondering, to what extent this has an impact on the kind of scholarship that, empirical economists can do, and whether you have any thoughts on this one.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, yeah, as a matter of fact, this paper would not have existed if Spotify hadn't made their data available. But I really think that access to data is one of the main bottlenecks nowadays when it comes to conducting research on large digital platforms. And so it's very important. It's a very important limitation to what we can learn about these platforms, their behavior and their impact, and our understanding of digital markets more generally. So on the other hand, there's still a lot of empirical studies that are performed on platforms, either by researchers that directly work for these platforms or that are granted access to their data. But usually this is conditional on the research question being asked. And so typically you can understand that firms are willing to grant access to their data to study questions whose answer is more likely to benefit them or at least not hurt them. So while there's not necessarily any reason to doubt the validity of the existing studies, I think this determines the type of questions that are studied in the end and for which we have an answer. And so in that sense, I think it does ultimately kind of bias what we learn about these firms and about these markets.
So I think, unfortunately, our time is already up. So thanks a lot, Louis, for participating today, for sharing us your thoughts about the study. And we're looking forward to seeing your next piece. And thanks for everyone in the audience for listening, and I hope you will join us soon at another episode. Thanks, Louis.
My pleasure. Thank you.